Good morning. So nice to see you all. I'd like to explore together with you this morning the mitzvah of Kedushat Beit HaKnesset, the sanctity of the synagogue, and really the way we relate to the shul, to the synagogue, the way we behave inside of the Beit Knesset. You know, Baruch Hashem, Chazdei Hashem, we've returned to our beloved Batei Knesset with some guidelines, some rules and regulations in place. We have to wear masks. We have to use hand sanitizer. We have to remain at a distance from our fellow mitpalim. But Baruch Hashem, we finally returned to our beloved Batei Knesset after an absence of 3-4 months. And I think it behooves us to examine how we relate to the Beit Knesset, how we behave inside of the shul. And ask the question, are the Batei Knesset here in Eretz Yisrael different than those in the Tfutzot? So I'll put some sources that we'll look at together up here on screen. Okay, share screen. Kedushat Beit HaKnesset, share. Okay, I trust you can all see the sources. And if you take a look at source number one, this is a verse from Yechezkel, Perek Yud Aleph. Yechezkel, of course, is prophesying to the Jews in Bavel. This is during Galut Bavel. This is after the exile, and he gives them instructions. And he says, Lachen emor, ko amar Hashem Elokim. This is what Hashem has said. Ki hirchaktim bagoyim, v'chi hafitzotim ba'aratzot. Okay, Hashem says, I've removed them far away among the nations. I've scattered them among the lands. The tfutzot. Va'ehi lahem lemigdash ma'at. Ba'aratzot esher ba'u sham. But I've made for them, or literally, I have been for them. I am for them. Okay, which is interesting. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I am for them. Not just that I've created for them or built for them, but I am for them a migdash ma'at, a small sanctuary, ba'aratzot esher ba'u sham, in the lands where they have arrived. So, of course, you all know that the shul, the Beit Knesset, is referred to as a migdash ma'at. What does that mean? That the Beit Knesset is a migdash ma'at. And by the way, the source for the fact that a Beit Knesset is a migdash ma'at is the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Chavtet here in source number 2. The Gemara brings that pasuk that we just saw, the pasuk that we began with from Yechezkel Perek Yud Aleph, and then Rabbi Yitzchak tells us Elu batei knesiot ubatei midrashot shebe bavel, that verse is a reference to the shuls and the batei medrash, the houses of study in Bavel, the houses of prayer and the houses of study in Bavel. So you see that the Beit Knesset, at least the origin of the Beit Knesset, is in Bavel, which is interesting. It makes a lot of sense that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, after the destruction of the Holy Temple, when we were exiled to Bavel, so in the absence of a Beit HaMikdash, so we have a Beit Knesset. But what does it mean that the Beit Knesset is called a Mikdash Ma'at, a literally small temple, okay? A small version of the Holy Temple. So the Mishnah Brura and many others explain that informs our attitude towards the Beit Knesset, our behavior inside of a Beit Knesset, that just as there's a mitzvah to show fear and reverence and awe and trepidation in the Beit HaMikdash, here in source number 3, there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah, a Torah commandment, to fear the Mikdash. Et shabtotai tishmaru, you shall observe or protect my Shabbases, my Sabbaths, u'migdashitiro ani Hashem, and you shall fear my Mikdash. I am Hashem. So there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah to show fear and reverence and awe. And as Chazal explained, it's not just for the mere structure or the edifice of the Beit HaMikdash, but we have to show fear and awe and reverence, deference to he who dwells there inside of the Beit HaMikdash. And that, of course, informs our behavior, not just inside of the Beit HaMikdash, but also on Har HaBayit as well. And that's a mitzvah min ha-Torah. That's interesting. The Mishnah Brura invokes this pasuk and suggests that, and he's not alone, that therefore a shul as a Mikdash Ma'at, as a small temple. There's significance to that. That just as we have a mitzvah to show fear and awe in the Holy Temple, in the Beit HaMikdash, so too in the Beit Knesset. And there's actually a rich discussion if the mitzvah of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset is Min HaTorah or Midrabanan. If it's Min HaTorah, just like the mitzvah to show fear and reverence for the Beit HaMikdash is, or if it's only Midrabanan. And the verse that we're about to see in the Mishnah is just an Asmachta Ba'alma. It's just a verse that the Chachamim bring to give a little strength, or maybe as a memory tool and a mnemonic, or to give a little strength, a little. It's a whole discussion what an asmachta is in general, but to give their enactments a little more koach, a little more strength. My recall is poor this morning. Haven't had enough coffee just yet, but to bolster their words. That's the word I was looking for. So it's interesting. As I mentioned, the Mishnah Berurah mentions at the beginning of his discussion of the mitzvah of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset, he invokes his concept of Migdash Ma'at and invokes the mitzvah of Umigdashiti Ro. And it's not coincidental. It's very significant. And again, it could be that he's touching on that Machloket Rishonim, whether the mitzvah of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset is Min HaTorah or only Midrabanan. In any case, the Mishnah here, in source number 4, in the fourth parak of Masechet Megillah, really informs, and that whole sugya there in the Gemara, really informs our discussion this morning. What our behavior is inside of the Beit HaKnesset, and what is the mitzvah of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset, and what are the hagdarot, what are the parameters, the parameters of the mitzvah, how is the mitzvah observed? So the Mishnah begins, Od Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, here in source number 4, I'll highlight it for you all to see. I trust you can all see the screen. Another statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda had previous Mishnah, told us about selling, or taught us about selling a Beit HaKnesset. And so Rabbi Yehuda continues and says, Beit HaKnesset Shecharav, Ein maspidin b'tocho. Interesting. The way we get into the discussion of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset, as we'll see, is by discussing a Beit Knesset that is no longer standing, a Beit Knesset that is in ruin, or that has been destroyed. And so it's a kal v'chomer. Just as there's a mitzvah to treat a Beit Knesset that is no longer standing, that is in ruin, with respect, with dignity, with fear and reverence, if these mitzvot apply to a Beit Knesset that is charav, kal v'chomer, a Beit Knesset that is still standing. Okay, but that's the chiddush of the Mishnah here. The chiddush is, because every Mishnah has to introduce something, has to teach something new, the chiddush is that even if it's a Beit Knesset that is in ruin, so the Mishnah teaches, even a Beit Knesset that is in ruin, we don't eulogize, and we'll see, the Gemara will explain, that we don't eulogize an ordinary individual inside of a Beit Knesset. Could be there are exceptions. If a person is a big Talmud Chacham, big Rav, important communal leader, then perhaps we make an exception. The Ein Mafshilim B'tocho Chavalim. We don't twist ropes inside of it. The Ein Porshin L'tocho Mitzudot. You don't spread nets inside of it. The Ein Shotchin Al-Gago Peirot. You don't spread fruit on its roof. In other words, you don't use it as your personal workshop. And in fact, the prohibitions, the things that are asur, the things that are prohibited to be done inside of a Beit Knesset, are things that are things of even of utility, your own personal needs, because it's a Mikdash Ma'at. It's not your home. It's not your workshop. It's Hashem's home. Okay, so we'll see more examples where really the prohibition is for things that are, you know, provide you with personal gain, using the Beit Knesset for some sort of utility, for some sort of other purpose beyond davening or learning Torah inside. And the Mishnah continues, Ein osin oto kapandaria, you can't make a shortcut through the Beit Knesset. Shne'emar, as it says, now the Mishnah brings here the pasuk from Vayikra Perek Lamed Vav, from the Tochacha. Interesting. Very interesting. The choice of the Pasuk here. Where the Torah says, V'hashimodi et migdashechem. Hashem says, I'm going to destroy your batei migdash. I'm going to make your sanctuaries desolate. Okay? And the Mishnah continues and darshans from this verse. What does that mean? Kiddushatan af kishehen shomimim. That a Beit HaKnesset retains its kiddusha. It retains its sanctity even when it's desolate, even when it's destroyed, even when it's empty, even when it's in ruin, as we mentioned. Okay? So therefore, if it retains its kiddusha, and you have to behave a certain way, even when it's no longer standing, kal vachomer when it's standing. Now it's interesting, it brings this verse from the Torah, from Vayikra Perek Lamed Vavid. As I mentioned, there's a machloket rishonim, whether the mitzvah of kiddusha Beit HaKnesset is therefore min haTorah, or only midrabanan, and this pasuk is in Asmachta v'Alma, but we're not going to get into that now. We'll leave that discussion aside. I want to look together with you at, again, how this affects us, how we are to behave inside of a Beit Knesset, now that Baruch Hashem, again, Chazdei Hashem, we've returned to our beloved Beit Knesset. And the Mishnah concludes by saying, Alubo Asavim, let's say, you know, you've got some grass that sprouts up inside of the Beit Knesset. It's fallen into disuse. It's in ruin. Maybe it's been destroyed. So, you know, there's grass that's popping up, okay? So the Mishnah says, Lo Yidlosh, you're not supposed to uproot that grass. You're not to take a lawnmower to that grass. Why? Mipnei Agmat Nefesh. Because of grief, right? You know, my grandmother used to say, Alashem, are you causing me Agmas Nefesh, right? What is Agmas Nefesh? Grief, pain. What does that mean? So what that means, we'll see, the Gemara also will mention this, but we'll see what it means is that you want to leave the grass to grow. You want to leave the synagogue unkempt and overgrown in order to cause pain to those passing by so that the passerbyers, the people witnessing this will be inspired to rebuild the Beit HaKnesset, to fix it up if it's been in disrepair, if it's no longer functioning. Okay? Or as Rashi explains, they're going to daven to Hashem to restore the site to its former glory, okay, to rebuild the Beit HaKnesset there. Okay, Rashi says that the people that are regilin litasef sham, the people that are, you know, found over there, yivakshu rachamim shechziru lekidmuto, that they ask Hashem for mercy. They daven that it should be restored to its former glory. Okay. So here you have the Mishnah teach that the mitzvah of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset applies even to a Beit Knesset that is in ruin. Now the Gemara continues and cites a braita here. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, but they knesiot ein noagin bahen kalut rosh. You can't act silly. You can't act with levity or lightheadedness inside of a Beit HaKnesset. Now all these things, we're talking about the sanctuary. Okay, now, you know, maybe even in the lobby, you know, you shouldn't act silly. Maybe a person never should act with kalut rosh, right? But I remember as a child, I used to get in trouble inside of the shul, even in the lobby. I was making trouble even in the lobby of the shul. But the Gemara continues and says, the Braita here continues and says, Ein ochlin behen, can't eat inside of a Beit HaKnesset, ve'ein shotin behen, you don't drink inside of a Beit HaKnesset, ve'ein neotin behen. Now she explains what it means is you don't, you know, ordain yourself, you don't, ordain is not the right word, you don't adorn. Yes, adorn is the right word. You also don't ordain yourself. You're a rabbi. But you don't adorn yourself. Ein mitkashtin bahem. You don't put on your jewelry, do up your hair in a Beit HaKnesset. So Rashi explains you don't eat or drink in a Beit HaKnesset. These things are kalut rosh. Now again, we're talking about the actual sanctuary. If the what we call the shul, if the synagogue, if the building has a side room, so in that side room, in that hall, right, a social hall, auxiliary room, a kiddush room, of course you can eat and drink. But this is talking about the actual sanctuary where people daven. So you can't eat, you can't drink, you can't adorn yourself, put on jewelry, put on makeup, do your hair. The ein mitaylin bahem, you can't walk around, just stam inside of a Beit HaKnesset. The Mishnah told us we don't make a shortcut through the Beit HaKnesset. ואין נכנסים בהן בחמה מפני החמה. You don't go inside of a Beit Knesset in the summer to escape the heat. It's, you know, sweltering, it's hot, right? And oh, it's nice and cold. Now you can go inside of a Beit Knesset where it's air conditioned and benefit from the air conditioning if you're going to open up a sefer and learn, or you're going to daven. But that's okay. But you don't go in taka just because you want to escape the heat, okay? You know, it's funny. I see during all the time during Bein HaZmanim here in Yerushalayim, you have advertised, they have all these kolalim to encourage these young people to come in, even during Bein HaZmanim, to chaparayin and to learn, which is beautiful. And sometimes in the summer months, they'll advertise, and it's air-conditioned, an air-conditioned base medrash, geshmak. Okay, so again, if you're just going to go in to benefit from escaping from the heat for no other reason, so that's the problem. But if you're going to open up a sefer, learn, or daven, that's okay. Now, as we'll get to in a moment, it could be that a Beit Midrash has a different din. That a Beit Midrash is different altogether, because a Beit Knesset is where you come and daven. It's a meeting place between you and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and there's mitzvah of Kedushat Beit HaKnesset, whereas maybe we are lenient with a Beit Midrash because that is a house of study. It's a house. It's a home. It's a home to the Talmidei Chachamim, to the Talmidim that are sitting and learning there. And maybe we allow them to eat and drink and even sleep, take a shluf if they need to, because they're busy learning. We'll get to that in a moment. Okay. And the Gemara continues, Ubak Shamim Ipnek Shamim, right? In the winter months or in the rainy season, we don't allow you to go into a Beit Knesset just for the sake of escaping the rain. Ve'ein maspidin bahen hesped shel yachid. And you can't make a hesped, you can't eulogize an individual. Okay, we'll see what that means in a moment, an individual. What it means is it's an ordinary individual. Aval korin bahen, but you can, you know, learn Torah, Mikra, you can read Tanakh inside of a Beit Knesset, Vishonin bahen, and you could learn Mishnah. Umaspidin bahen hesped shel rabim. Oh, and you can be maspid a big Talmud Chacham, as Rashi explains. Now Rashi says the reason is because of the size of the Beit HaKnesset. In other words, you have a big Talmud Chacham, you have the Rav of the city, right? And by the way, we extend this not just to Rav, but also to communal leaders, person served the community for many years, distinguished individual. Sometimes you'll see that the Halvaya will take place inside of a Beit Knesset. So Rashi explains because of the size of the Beit Knesset, you need to accommodate the masses of people that are attending the funeral. But I think that maybe you could interpret the Gemara in another way, that all of these prohibitions are really about utility, that a person is not allowed to get personal gain out of the Beit HaKnesset. It's Hashem's home. It's a Mikdash Mad. It's a miniature Mikdash. A miniature Beis HaMikdash. So you're not allowed to get personal benefit, personal gain. I mean, you could make the extension. It's similar maybe to the prohibition of Me'ilah. And some say that talking in shul is maybe a violation of Me'ilah. You're not allowed to benefit from the things in the Beit HaMikdash, things that have been promised to the Beit HaMikdash, korbanot from the Beit HaMikdash. You're not allowed to get personal benefit out of those things. They belong to Hashem. They belong to Shulchan Gavoa. Okay? You're stealing from a Kodesh Baruch. So in a similar way, you're not allowed to get personal benefit from the synagogue. But maybe if it's a hesped shel rabim in the language of the Gemara, if it's a big Talmud Chacham, so that is not called personal benefit. That is not called utilizing the synagogue for your needs, but maybe you're utilizing it for the sake of a mitzvah. Maybe you're fulfilling a mitzvah through it. Maybe you're showing kavod to this big Talmud Chacham. It's kavod haTorah. You're giving kavod to the Torah, kavod to the Torah. And so maybe in a certain sense, you're fulfilling a mitzvah. And we'll see, maybe there is an exception to when you're performing a mitzvah. In general, we don't eat inside of a Beit HaKnesset, but what if it's a mitzvah? Okay, we're going to come back to that question. Just for the sake of time, I'm going to skip a few lines here. The Gemara continues and talks about, again, that, you know, when the Beit HaKnesset is functioning, you clean up the floor, you sweep up the floor, you don't let grass grow, but when it's not functioning, you let the grass grow, mipnei akmat nefesh, as we saw. I'm just going to skip a few lines to where it says, Amar Rabbi Asi. Here I'll highlight the passage on the screen. Amar Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi said, "Batei Knesiot shebe'Bavel al tnai hein asuyin." Okay. So what does it mean, al tnai hein asuyin? Interesting. The synagogues in Bavel are built on condition. Built on condition. So let me explain. There's some sort of conditional use. Look at Rashi here in source number 5. Put Rashi, Amenat sheishtam shubahem, on condition that you be able to use them. We said that you're not allowed to use the synagogue for your own needs, your personal benefit. But maybe if you make a stipulation, a t'nai, maybe you can have certain, you can have certain uses. You can use the Beit HaKnesset for certain uses, certain functions. Okay? So long as you made this t'nai. Al t'nai hein asuyin. So I'm explaining that just like you can make a t'nai for a tashmish, something that is used in the performance of a mitzvah, tashmishei mitzvah. The Braita distinguishes between tashmishei mitzvah and tashmishei kedusha, things that are used for the mitzvah and things that have inherent kedusha. Tefillin, for instance, like mezuzot, like sifrei Torah, that require geniza, but things that, you know, were used for the sake of a mitzvah, like your dalet minim, your lulav, or your sukkah, or your tzitzit, talit katan, things like that. While they are in use for the mitzvah, you can't have other uses. You can't use them for other things. But after they're no longer in use, so then they can be discarded of. Okay, how we discard them, it's a long discussion. But you can make a stipulation, a t'nai. Some explain this is the sheet of the Ramban, Magen Avraham, and the Bir Halacha, that you can make a t'nai, just like you can make a t'nai by a mitzvah. For instance, the mitzvah, the Gemara in the first paragraph of Sukkah says that the atzei ha-sukkah, the wood of the sukkah, it's machloket, Rambam Rosh, whether it's talking about the schach or the tfanot, the schach or the walls, we assume that it's both, machmir. But you can't use that the entire week of Sukkot. Okay, fine. It's set aside for the mitzvah. Okay? Similarly, we extend that to the noise sukkah. You put it up. But what if, you know, you want an apple. You put up apples or you put grapes inside of your sukkah as decoration or a pomegranate. And all of a sudden, you know, you're hungry. It's chol hamoed. You want to take a piece of fruit. Can you do that? So we say, no, it's been set aside for the mitzvah. It's muktzah machmat mitzvah. It's set aside for the sake of the mitzvah. You can't have personal benefit from it. However, if you made a t'nai, if you made a stipulation that you might want to use it, right, for your own benefit, so then it's permissible to pull down that piece of fruit and eat it. In a similar way, as I mentioned, the Ramban, cited by the Ran, Magid Avram, and Bir Halacha, and others explain that maybe a Beit HaKnesset is similar to a article that's used for a mitzvah. Just like the walls of the sukkah, the wood of the sukkah, the schach is used for mitzvah. Just like your arba minim, but it doesn't retain its kiddusha, doesn't have kiddusha. You can make a stipulation. Similarly, you can apply that. Just like tashmishei mitzvah, you can make a t'nai, so too the Beit HaKnesset. That's how some explain this concept of the t'nai. Okay? So that's Shitat Rashi and Ramban and others that, you know, you can make this t'nai, and that's what was done in Bavel. Now, maybe there's an additional reason the Gemara mentions Dafka in Bavel, they made a t'nai, because as the Gemara later says, and Daf Chavtet, here it's in, if you scroll down to source number 9, Rabbi Elazar HaKapar teaches, Atidin batei knesiot ubatei midrashot shebabavel, in the future, the shuls and batei medrash, the houses of worship and the houses of study of Bavel, they are going to be established in the land of Israel. Now, what does that mean exactly? Does that mean that, you know, somehow the actual structure is going to, you know, magically get on a magic carpet ride and be brought over here? Or does it mean that, no, eventually they're going to close down their doors? Like, you know, unfortunately, many, many shuls all over the world, over time, the community moves away. It's only temporary. You close down your doors, and then, you know, Mitzvah Shem, they'll eventually make Aliyah. That, not that the Beit Knesset or Beit Midrash itself, but that the community associated with that Beit Knesset will Mitzvah Shem come up on Aliyah. And, you know, hopefully we'll see that soon. There's a lot of talk about a dramatic increase in Aliyah due to coronavirus and unfortunately the increase in anti-Semitism and the violence and the rioting, that we might see a major aliyah. So it's a show. Okay, we'll see the words of this Gemara fulfilled. But, you know, maybe that's what it means when it says that the synagogues in Bavel were built on condition, not just in condition that they be used, but on condition that eventually you're going to close their doors and you're going to leave, because Galut Bavel is only temporary. You're going to return to Eretz Yisrael. So you don't want to imbue those Batei Knesset with Kiddusha. Now the Gemara continues and says, but nevertheless, Afal Pichein Ein Noagim Bahen Kalut Rosh. You still can't act with levity. In other words, even if you make a stipulation that you're going to use the synagogue, as Rashi explains, and as others understand, you're going to use it for your own personal needs, which may allow you to eat in the synagogue, to drink in the synagogue, to sleep in the synagogue, but you can't act with silliness and levity and lightheadedness. Okay? And then the Gemara goes on, just for the sake of time, we'll skip these few lines about discussing making calculations inside of the Beit HaKnesset. Are we talking about personal calculations, communal calculations? And what the Gemara basically says is that, you know, a community that doesn't use their Beit Knesset for the right reasons, they're making all sorts of business calculations inside of it. So that community, unfortunately, is going to have to, you know, use their Beit Knesset for some other unsavory purpose, like housing a make mitzvah, Gemara says. But I want to skip to where it says here, ve'ein ne'otin behem. Okay, skip a couple lines where I've highlighted ve'ein ne'otin behem. You can't adorn yourself in the Beit HaKnesset. You can't, you know, put jewelry on, put on your makeup, do up your hair inside of a synagogue, inside of the sanctuary. Amarava chachamim v'talmidehem mutarim. But it's permissible for chachamim and their students to do so. Now, we're not assuming that the talmidei chachamim are, you know, are busy doing their hair and putting on jewelry and, you know, putting on makeup. What it means is that a talmid chacham, or the b'nei yeshiva, people that are learning Torah, for them it's permissible to get certain benefit from the Beit HaKnesset. Or really, as we'll see, the Beit HaMidrash. For them, there's a special dispensation where we allow them to make use out of the Beit HaKnesset or the Beit HaMidrash. Okay? The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, "My Bei Rabbanan." What does it mean, Bei Rabbanan? The house of the rabbis? Beit HaRabbanan. Yeah. That a Beis Medrash is called the house of the rabbis. Okay? A Beit HaMidrash, a yeshiva, a koilel, whatever you want to call it, a Beis Medrash, is the house of the rabbis. And take a look at Rashi. What does it mean that it's called the house of the rabbis? My Bei Rabbanan, lama korin batei midrashot, Bei Rabbanan, why are they called the houses of the rabbis? Lefi she beitam hu lechol davar, Rashi says. It's their house, lechol davar, for every single thing. What does that mean? It's their house for every single thing. What it means is that according to Rashi, they could use the Beit Midrash for whatever purpose. It's their home. It doesn't have the same din of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset. For them, it's their house. They are learning Torah there all day long, so they're entitled to eat there and drink there and even sleep there. It's their home for all intents and purposes, explains Rashi. Okay, we'll see that not everyone agrees. Right? The Rambam will limit the usage of a Beit Midrash that a Talmid Chacham may have inside of a Beit Midrash or a Talmid Chacham, someone learning there. Okay? Now the Gemara then continues and says, the Braita had told us that you don't go inside of a Beit Knesset if it's raining to take cover from the rain, or if it's so hot to get relief from the heat. Right? And then the Gemara continues with a story of how a number of rabbis did just that. They seemingly, lichora, seemingly went inside of a Beit HaKnesset to take cover from the rain. Okay? Here. Kihad Ravina, when Ravina, the Rav Ada Bar Matna, and Rav Ada Bar Matna, havu kaimei v'shalei shilta mei Rava. They were standing and asking a shaila from Rava. They had a question. They were talking and learning. All of a sudden, atta zilcha demitra, all of a sudden, a tremendous downpour. It just started to pour. So Eilei lebeit knishta. So they went up and entered inside of the Beit HaKnesset. They were standing outside talking and learning, asking a shaila, and they took cover seemingly inside of the Beit HaKnesset. Amrei, but they said they wanted to qualify what they were doing, or explain what they were doing, because we just learned you're not allowed to take cover inside of a Beit HaKnesset if it's raining. Amrei, they said, had the Eilinan lebeit knishta lav mishimitra. That we've entered the Beit HaKnesset, it's not because of the rain. It's not because we're trying to escape the rain or take cover the rain. You know what? It's because the Shmata, the learning, this discussion requires clarity, like the clarity of a north wind blowing on a beautiful day. Okay, whatever that's supposed to mean. I don't understand the metaphor, but Rashi explains the metaphor. But what they're saying is, what Ravina and Rav Adar are saying is, we didn't go into the Beit HaKnesset because we're taking cover from the rain, but we went in because we need to focus on what Rav is telling us. Rav is giving us an answer to our Shiloh. Okay, we're having this important talking and learning, this important discussion. We need to chop it. We need to get it. It's got to be clear. It's got to be clear in our minds. Okay? Now, we'll come back in a moment to how the Rambam understands this story. But what's interesting is that there's a machloket, a very, very rich discussion concerning this dispensation of the Tanai, of making a condition or a stipulation when building a Beit HaKnesset. I already added that, when building the Beit HaKnesset. No, Gemara doesn't say that. Gemara says that the Batei Knesiot, the synagogues in Bavel, are made out tonight. But what many explain is that when building a shul, if it's made al tanai, if it's built with this stipulation, and many point out it has to be a verbal declaration, although some assume that maybe nowadays this is accepted, and it's so accepted that we assume that all Batei Knesset, certainly in Chutz La'aretz, are built al tanai, but others say no, it has to be made verbally when the synagogue is built, that you can eat or drink or sleep in a synagogue, that it's not imbued with Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset. It's made on Tanai, and I've explained, as some Rishon explained, you can get personal benefit from it. You can use it for your own needs. Okay? So that, I said, is the Shita of the Ramban, as cited by the Ran and others. However, Tosfot there, both in our Gemara, the fourth parak of Megillah, as well as in Arvei Pesachim, Tosfot is machmir. And Tosfot understands that this shita, Tosfot's shita is, Tosfot says that this tanai only works on two conditions, that this condition or stipulation only works on two conditions. Number one, it only works in Chutz La'aretz. It only works outside of Eretz Yisrael. Why does it only work outside of Eretz Yisrael? Because the Gemara says, it's in Bavel, the Batei Knesiot Shebe Bavel. The synagogues in Bavel are made al tanai. So Tosfot is medayik in the Lashon of the Gemara. Tosfot reads the language of the Gemara very carefully, very literally. He says, this only works, the stipulation only works outside of Eretz Yisrael. You can't do it in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, you could never make a tanai. You could never build a shul al tanai. You could never use a shul for your own personal needs. Okay? Which, it's interesting. Again, you know, going back to the pasuk that we began with in Yechezkel, that this Mikdash Me'ad is dafka in Chutz La'aretz, and that, you know, the Gemara on Chavtet, as we saw, says that eventually those shuls in Chutz La'aretz will, or in Bavel, but in Chutz La'aretz will move to Eretz Yisrael. It's only temporary. So Tosfos reads it that you can only make the stipulation on shuls in Chutz La'aretz. Okay? Outside the land of Israel. This tonight does not work on shuls in Eretz Yisrael. They have Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset, period. End of discussion. That's number one. The Sheet of Tosfot also is that this tonight only works when the Beit Knesset is no longer in use, when it's in ruin. Okay? And just for the sake of time, you know, we're not going to look together at Tosfot, but here you can look at source 6 and 7. I put a few comments of the Tosfot to our Gemara in Megillah, as well as the Gemara in Pesachim. Tosfot l'shitato explains that, number one, this Tanai only applies or only works in Chutz La'aretz, and number two, it only works for a shul that's no longer in use, a shul that's in ruin. Now, where does he get that? Again, it's based on the context. The Mishnah began by talking about a Beit Knesset that is Charab, or Charev, Beit Knesset that is in ruin, that's in disrepair, that's not in use. And in that context, he interprets the Gemara to mean, what does it mean that the shuls in Bavel? It means that the shuls in Bavel, which are no longer in use, which are in ruin, which are going to be left. So Tosfos would explain that you leave the shul behind when you return to Eretz Yisrael, and you make a stipulation that when the shul is no longer in use, it no longer has kiddusha. You leave it. No longer has kiddusha. You're leaving it behind. Okay. So again, Lishita of Tosfot is, number one, it only applies this condition or the stipulation can only work outside of the land of Israel. And number two, it can only work, you know, sort of post facto, once the synagogue is destroyed. You build it al tanai that when it is no longer in use, when it is going to be in ruin, it's not going to have kiddusha anymore, and you can use it for your own personal needs. And he brings different proofs from the Gemara. One of the things he says, interesting, he cites the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim, where the Gemara describes how they used to make kiddush in the Beit HaKnesset on Friday night. So the Gemara there says, well, who are they making kiddush for? Everyone's going to go home and make kiddush for their family. They're not being yotze with the kiddush that's made in Beit HaKnesset. No, that's for the guests, the people that are eating, drinking, and sleeping in the Beit HaKnesset. Once upon a time, you know, people traveling through, probably even into the modern period, people, you know, in Europe would come to a village, a shtetl, and they would sleep in the shul. They would eat in the shul and drink in the shul. That's where they would have their Shabbos suda. So Tosfot assumes that they're not actually eating in the Beit HaKnesset, because you can't eat in the Beit HaKnesset, according to Tosfot. This Tanai does not work. Even in Chutz La'aretz, it's only once the Beit HaKnesset is in ruin, according to Tosfot. So Tosfot assumes that it's a cheder hasmucha le-Beit HaKnesset, that they're not actually eating inside of the Beit HaKnesset, but they're eating, you know, in a social hall or an auxiliary hall or, you know, a kiddush room that's next to the Beit HaKnesset. That's Tosfot Shita. Now, it could be they make a kiddush inside of the Beit HaKnesset and they eat in the room next door. There's a rich discussion in the sugya of kiddush b'makom suda. You know, it's kiddush b'makom suda. You have to make kiddush where you eat, where you eat your meal. So is that a din in kiddush? Is that a din in suda? Is that a din in time or in place? So, you know, what if you hear kiddush in one room and you eat in another room? Is that permissible? So yeah, all different shitot, but you know, preferably you should see the room that you're going into. But even if it's, you can't see it, but it's in the same building, the Mishnah Berurah has this language, it's under the same rooftop, then that's acceptable. But it's a rich discussion. So Tosfos assumes that, you know, you can never eat inside of a Beit HaKnesset. So what are we talking about in Arvei Pesachim, that we make kiddush for those people passing through or eating, drinking, and sleeping in a Beit HaKnesset? According to Tosfos, you can never do that. No, it refers to, you know, they're eating, sleeping, and drinking in the room next to the Beit HaKnesset, in the kiddush room, okay, in some multi-purpose room. And so Tosfot, again, that's the Shita of Tosfot. Tosfot is machmir. And we'll see that the Shulchan Aruch actually rules like Tosfot. Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosfot. We'll see. Okay. However, many cite from the Yerushalmi that it would seem that even according to the opinion that you're never allowed to eat or drink or sleep in a Beit HaKnesset, even according to the Dea Machmira, the most strict opinion, maybe there's an exception if it's for the sake of a mitzvah. And many quote the Yerushalmi that they used to gather together inside of a Beit HaKnesset to la'aber et ha-shana, to do ibur shana, to add a month to the year, to intercalate the year, to add a leap year, a leap month, rather, to fix the calendar, and they would have a suda. And in fact, the Yerushalmi Pesachim even says, in source number 8, that a Beit Knesset requires B'dikat chametz. You can ask, why does a Beit Knesset require B'dikat chametz if you're not allowed to eat or drink in a Beit HaKnesset? Okay? Let's say you didn't make the Tanai. Or let's say even according to Tosfot, the Tanai doesn't work. So you can't eat or drink in a Beit HaKnesset. Right? So Rabbi Yirmiyah says here in source number 8, Bai bate knesiot, bate midrashot. Ma'u sheyu tzrichin b'dika. Shuls and batei medrash, houses of study, houses of worship, houses of study, they require bedikat chametz. You got to check the chametz. Matzricha lei shekin machnisin l'sham b'shabbatot uv'roshei chodeshim, because yeah, people would get together there on Shabbos and on Rosh Chodesh. They would have some sort of suuda there, even in the Beit HaKnesset. So some explain that even without a tnai, or even according to Tosfot, who says that the tnai doesn't work, okay, while the Beit Knesset is standing, but if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, if you're getting together to la'aber at the shana, to proclaim a leap year, to fix the calendar, or maybe even, as the Gemara here says, if Pesachim, you get together on Shabbos and on Rosh Chodesh for some sort of Shabbos Suda, maybe it's a Shalashidis, maybe it's a Rosh Chodesh Suda. So if you're allowed, I mean, if the Gemara is saying that they require bedikat chametz, you got to check for chametz, that implies that they're eating there. They're having a suda there. So maybe if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, that's permissible. And some explain that Gemara and Pesachim, oh, here, Tosfos, you know, doesn't have to come up with this answer that those guests are actually eating and drinking and sleeping in a room next to the sanctuary in some sort of multi-purpose room. But no, they could be eating and drinking and sleeping in the actual sanctuary itself. Why? Because of the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim. So some explain that even without a tanai, it's permissible to eat and drink in a sanctuary if it is for the sake of a mitzvah. We'll come back to that idea. Very important. Okay. In addition, even again, according to Shita Tosfot, who says that the tanai doesn't work unless the synagogue is in ruin, but nevertheless, okay, maybe even according to Tosfot, if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, maybe even Tosfot would have to admit. It's interesting, the Yerushalmi says we check for chametz in the shul, because seemingly people would get together there on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and eat in the shul. But the way the Shulchan Aruch formulates it is you check in the shul because kids bring chametz into shul, right? Why would you have to, why would Chazal Institute doing bedikat chametz inside of a shul if you're not allowed to eat in shul? So we'll see that, again, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosfos. The Shulchan Aruch is machmir. The Shulchan Aruch is stringent like the opinion of Tosfot. So for the Shulchan Aruch, the reason why you check for chametz in the synagogue is because, of course, you're not eating. No one's eating the synagogue. Who's eating? The kids. Okay, the little kids bring, you know, bring their candies, bring their crackers, bring their bag of Cheerios. Oh, so that's why you have to check. But, you know, as you know, we are Mekil. Many are Mekil, and we allow shuls. We don't paskin like Tosfos. We make it like the Ramban. We assume that you can make a shul al tanai, and people will eat, have a kiddush in shul, and allow even eating and drinking in the sanctuary. We'll come back to that. But you know that many shuls that are made al tanai, I mentioned, there's a discussion whether it has to be a verbal declaration when the shul is built, or perhaps nowadays it's assumed that the shul is going to serve other purposes. So it doesn't exactly have kedushat beit haKnesset. I put a picture here of the Alte Neu Shul in Prague. This is my wife and I, and actually our little baby, her head got cut off, but this is in front of the Alte Neu Shul in Prague, which gets its name from this tanai. Actually, there are two reasons. The Alte Neu Shul in Prague, the shul where, you know, allegedly up in the attic, the golem is, right? If the Maharal ever indeed made a golem. You know, someone once remarked that it's not so clear if he made a golem, but he made a student like the Tosfos Yom Tov. Now that's quite a remarkable feat. To make a golem, not such a remarkable feat, but to make a student like the Tosfos Yom Tov, oh, now that's a great feat. So the Alte Neu Shul is a shul that was built in Prague in 1270, and there are two reasons why it's called Alte Neu, right? It's explained that it's called Alte Neu. It's kind of a double entendre, because alt, old, and Neu, new. Originally, it was the new synagogue when it was built in 1270. It was called the new synagogue. But then when they started building more shuls in the 16th century, sort of during the golden age of Prague, in the 16th century there, it became known as the old new shul, the Alte Neu Shul. And also, some explain, it gets its name for the fact that it's built al tanai. That again, just like the Gemara told us, the shuls in Bavel are built al tanai. They're built on condition. So this shul was built al tanai without kedushat beit haKnesset. You can use it for other purposes. Okay, that's what some explain. Many achronim explain that the reason why we call a shul, or we call a synagogue rather, a shul or a shtibel, or the chassidim call it a klois, is because we should not make the mistake that it is a Beit Knesset. It does not have Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. You're eating there, the Chassidim are having their Shalashudas there. Okay, now, you know, nowadays, because Baruch Hashem, we're well-to-do, so we can afford to build these big, massive structures with many different rooms and many different kiddush halls, and there's a classroom for the kids, right, and youth groups. But it used to be that the shul was, you know, one building. So some achronim, you know, want to explain, oh, that's why nowadays we call it a shul or a shtibel or a kloiz, because we assume that this doesn't have kedushat beit hakneset, because you're eating, you're having shalashudas there. Or some explain that today shuls are like batei medrash. Okay, what does that mean? Shuls are like batei medrash. That just as we saw, the beit midrash is the house of the rabbis. They're learning there, and therefore we give them an allowance, as a dispensation or allowance, that they're allowed to eat and drink there and take a nap there because it's their home. So too, our batei knesset today are batei medrash. I mean, I know in my shul here in Har Nof, Baruch Hashem, you know, all day long people are coming in and out and learning inside the beit knesset, inside the sanctuary. So for them, maybe it's a beit midrash. And so for them, there's a dispensation that they can maybe eat and drink, and maybe others coming in to learn can eat and drink there. You know, we're going to have to revisit the idea of Eretz Yisrael, because as I mentioned, according to Tosfot, this Tanai only works in Bavel. The Gemara says that it's the synagogues in Bavel that are made out Tanai. We're going to come back to that. But first, take a look at the Rambam. Okay, the Rambam here in source number 10 writes, the Batei Knesset, the Batei Midrashot, Eino Agin Behen Kalut Rosh, the chulei, et cetera, right? We don't act with levity in a Beit Knesset or a Beit Midrash. Here, by the way, in Hilchot Tefillah, in the 11th chapter, the Rambam, he lumps together a Beit Knesset and a Beit Midrash. He doesn't make a distinction, okay? He assumes that they're the same. They have the same dinim. You can't eat there. You can't drink there. You can't act with levity there. You can't just stop and walk through there. You can't go in there to escape the heat, as we said, or to escape the rain. The Chachamim v'Talmideihem, but the way he formulates it, doesn't make a distinction between a Beit Knesset and a Beit Midrash. But he assumes that we're talking about the same type of building, except that there's a dispensation for the Talmid Chacham, as we saw. The Chachamim v'Talmideihem, but the wise, the rabbis, and their students, mutarin le'echol v'lishtot b'hem, they can eat and drink there, midochak. Very, very interesting. The Rambam adds this word, midochak. What does that mean, midochak? What does it mean, midochak? It's out of pressing need. They have no other choice, right? It's a real need. It's a pressing circumstance. What does he mean, midochak? And where does he get that from? The Gemara itself doesn't qualify its statement. The Gemara just said, as we saw, that it's called a house for the Chachamim. It's called their home. And so therefore, they can use it for their own purposes. And according to Rashi, they could use it for really all of their purposes, eating, drinking, sleeping, etc. So where does the Rambam come up with this midochak? And we'll see that the Shulchan Aruch is machmir like the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch cites the Rambam and adds this word midochak. Okay, where does he get that midochak? That it's only out of pressing need. It's a real need. So the Kesef Mishnah there explains here in source number 11. I'll just summarize for the sake of time. Kesef Mishnah explains that, you know where he learns that from? He learns that from the story that we saw in the Gemara about Ravina and Rav Ada, and how they were asking a question from Rava, and all of a sudden it started to pour. And so Ravina and Rav Ada and Rava took shelter inside of the Beit HaKnesset. And they explained, no, this is not a pegam in Kedushat Beit HaKnesset, Chas V'Shalom. But, you know, this is a pressing need. We are coming in, again, the way the Rambam is reading this Gemara, we're coming in here to take refuge from the rain. It's pouring, and we need to hear these words of Torah. So the Kesef Mishnah explains, oh, that's where the Rambam gets this dochak from. And the Rambam understands this story, this Ma'aser Rav, as a qualification, as a limitation. That the Gemara, after having just told us that a Talmid Chacham, he's at home in the Beit Midrash. He can do whatever he wants in the Beit Midrash. It's his home. He can eat and drink. So the Kesef Mishnah explains that according to the Rambam, the Gemara then continues and relates the story about Ravina and Rav Ada and Rava to tell us, oh, but wait, there's a limitation there. It's only when there's a pressing need. It's only when there's a down pour rain that a Talmud Chacham can make use of the Beit HaKnesset or Beit Midrash for his own purposes. It's not that it's his home anytime he wants, according to the Rambam, the way the Rambam's reading this Gemara. But as the Kesef Mishnah explains, that the Rambam understands this story to come and limit the use that a Talmud Chacham may have from a Beit HaKnesset or a Beit Midrash. That it's only when there's a pressing need. Okay, we're going to have to try and understand what that means. What's called Dochak? What's called a pressing need? Does it mean that he can eat there and drink there and sleep there only if he's homeless? He has no other place to eat or drink or sleep? We're going to revisit that question. Okay? But the Bach here, we're not going to look at the whole Bach. The Bach, he cites the lenient positions that understand, you know, the fact that people were eating and drinking in a Beit HaKnesset to mean that, no, as I mentioned before, it's certainly, if it's a mitzvah, he cites the Ramban, citing the Beit Yosef and the Or Zeruah and others, the Agot Ashri, that a Talmud Chacham can eat and drink in a Beit HaKnesset, either it's Hachnasat Orchem, you're bringing someone into your Beit HaKnesset, just like you'd bring them into your home, or it's a poor person, a person that doesn't have anywhere to live, or they're visitors, they're orchim, they're guests, okay? And the Bach assumes like the lenient position, but then he concludes that the Shulchan Aruch is machmir on this issue, and machmir like Tosfot, that this Tanai does not apply outside. Excuse me, this Tanai only applies in Chutz La'aretz, does not apply in Eretz Yisrael, it only applies outside of Eretz Yisrael, and it only applies when a synagogue is no longer standing, it's no longer functioning, and also cites, the Shulchan Aruch cites the Rambam, which we'll see in a moment. But then he cites, but nevertheless, you know, there are those that are mekil. The Ramah will see cites the Ran, that's Mekil, that says that we can be Mekil with the Beit HaMidrash and understand the concept of a Beit HaMidrash like Rashi and the Ran and others understand it, that it's home for them. So they can act as if it's home for them. You don't have to be so fancy. Okay. So take a look here at source number 13. So the Shulchan Aruch is Machmir, like Tosfot and the Rambah. He writes the following, Batei Knesset Batei Midrash Shot Ein Noagin Behem Kalut Rosh Kigon, Schok, Vitul, V'sicha B'teila. A Beit Knesset and a Beit Midrash, it has Kiddusha. We don't act inside of a Beit Knesset or Beit Midrash with levity. We don't fool around. We don't act with lightheadedness. We don't even V'sicha B'teila carry on unnecessary conversations. Okay, we don't speak about things that are certainly things that are inappropriate, but even things that are maybe unrelated to the tefillah. Now, it's interesting. A longer discussion, but the prohibition of speaking in shul is not just a din in hefsek b'tefillah, making an interruption during certain parts of tefillah, but it's a din in kiddushat beit haknesset. It's a din in how we behave in the synagogue due to the sanctity, the holiness of the synagogue, that it's Hashem's home. L'mayinaf gamina, what's the practical difference? If it's a din in hefsek batfila, making interruption, or if it's a din in kiddushat beit haknesset, well, the nafgamina would be, what if it's outside of davening? What if it's after davening? You know, can you still talk to your friend? Can you say hello? So it's a question. And you see the Shulchan Aruch here is machmir. Many opinions are machmir. The Aruch HaShulchan asks the question, you know, how is it that nowadays people aren't so machmir? They say hello to their friends. Certainly forbidden conversation is certainly forbidden. But, you know, how do people just inquire, how are you? They give shalom. They, you know, talk about the family. That is seemingly sicha b'teila. That is seemingly not appropriate for the Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset. So it's interesting, the Aruch HaShulchan there, you know, Kidarko Bakodesh defends many practices as they have developed. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, you know what? It must be that we paskin that the Batei Knesset are built al tanai. They're built on condition. So therefore, if the Kiddushah is, it's conditional, meaning if at the outset it was stipulated, or maybe assumed, that the synagogue doesn't have real Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset, that just like can have a shalosh shudas in the Beit Knesset, the Aruch HaShulchan says you can talk to your friends after tefillah. After tefillah, we must emphasize. Okay? And then the Shulchan Aruch continues, Ein ochlin v'shotim behem, we don't eat or drink in the Beit HaKnesset, v'ein mitkashtim behem, you don't adorn yourself, v'lo mitaylim behem, you don't take a walk, v'lo nichnasim behem, v'chama mipnei hachama, v'akshamim mipnei agshamim, v'talmidei chachamim, v'talmideihem, mutarim lechol lishtot behem midochak. Oh, so the Shulchan Aruch adds, here that a Talmud Chacham, or a Talmud, Stam Talmud, student, someone learning, he can eat or drink, right? If it's pressing. The Yesh Omrim, and the Ramah adds, Ramah cites the Ran, there are those who say the Beit HaMidrash, afilu shalom idochak shari. Now we have to distinguish between a Beit Knesset and a Beit HaMidrash, okay? Or maybe even for an individual who is coming there to learn. So even when it's not midochak, it's permissible, right? You allow him to eat and drink and maybe even take a little shlof there. Why? Because it's his home. And you can go into many yeshivos and you see guys steiging and learning, and you also see some guys taking a nap. Okay, no, maybe they're really tired from all the learning. Okay, so we are makil. In fact, the Mogen Avram and the Mishnah Brura here explain that, you know, what does midochak mean? What does the Rambam mean when it's really pressing, a real pressing need? So the Mogen Avram and the Mishnah Brura explain that, you know, maybe even for a Talmud Chacham to have to leave the Beit Midrash to have lunch elsewhere, that's called dochak. That's called Bittel Torah. Here he's spiking and learning. And if you make him, you know, go home and have lunch at home or go to some restaurant where he can't afford it, or, you know, so maybe midochak, in other words, to give up time studying Torah, that's called midochak. And so those who want to kvetch on the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, that maybe even to eat and drink a little bit, that's called midochak. And even according to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, it would be permissible. But certainly of the Ramah and the Ran and others that say even when it's not midochak, you can still eat and drink, so long the Magen Avraham adds that it's not kalut rosh. In other words, even the lenient position, which says you can have a little something inside the yeshiva, right? You can eat, you can drink, maybe even a Beit HaKnesset, but it can't be kalut rosh. You can't get to the level or the point where you're being silly, where you're fooling around. So you can have a shalashudis, right? Maybe, especially, again, it's a mitzvah. We'll visit that in a second. But maybe a Purim Suda is that's beyond the pale of what's permissible. Okay, here now it's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam that only allows a Talmud Chacham to use the Beit HaKnesset for his own purposes when it's midochak. Yet when it comes to sleeping, the Shulchan Aruch is lenient. He's machmir like the Rambam when it comes to eating and drinking, and only allows a midochak. But here, which is interesting, he allows it for sleeping in Seif Gimel. He allows it in the base medrash to sleep. Beit Knesset, certainly you can't sit, can't eat, you can't drink, you can't sleep. That's Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. Again, we'll see, he paskins like Tosfo. But in the Beit Midrash, then it's permissible there. Okay, it's permissible in the Beit Midrash. So he allows a yeshiva bacher to sleep in the Beit Midrash. There's even a medrash, it's not actually in the Midrashic literature, it's in later sources, that says that the saliva that comes out, the drool that comes out of the mouth of the yeshiva bacher when he falls asleep on his gemara in the Beit Midrash, so that's going to be the tal, the dew, that's going to be used for the tchiyat hamitim, the resurrection of the dead. There's some connection in any case. The Shulchan Aruch, however, allows for Litzorich mitzvah to use the shul for your own purposes. Again, that's not called for your own purposes. That's called Hashem's purposes. That's why I tried to explain at the beginning of the shir that maybe that's why we have this dispensation for a Talmud Chacham to be maspid him inside of a Beit Knesset, not just because the Beit Knesset can accommodate all the people participating in his halvaya, in the funeral, but also it's for the sake of a mitzvah, and you can't get personal gain from the Beit HaKnesset, but if it's used for the sake of a mitzvah, that's not called your own personal benefit. That's called you're doing it for Hashem, for the sake of a mitzvah. So here, the Shulchan Aruch says that, you know, you can eat or drink if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, or you can sleep in Seif Dalet in the Beit HaKnesset on Yom Kippur. People used to stay in the Beit HaKnesset all night Yom Kippur. They wouldn't sleep, really. I mean, they'd sleep maybe a few weeks, but they'd be saying Tehillim and all sorts of Tchinot and all sorts of Piyutim, learning. And he says, "Vafilo l'tzarech mitzvah acheret." Even, you know, if it's for some other mitzvah, like kigon shet nikabtsim la aber hashana bebeit haKnesset mutar lechol sham, to get together to, as we mentioned, the Yerushalmi says to do ibur shana, to add a month to the calendar. Okay, so it would seem interesting that, you know, the Shulchan Aruch, who, as we'll see in a moment, is machmir like Tosfot, that you cannot make a t'nai on a shul that is in use, or a shul that's in Eretz Yisrael. But nevertheless, even this opinion, which again is machmir, allows if it's l'tzorech mitzvah. Okay? So, you know, even maybe the stringent opinion would allow Litzrach Mitzvah, and that becomes important, as we'll see in a moment. So, in Sif Yud Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Im Bishat Binan Beit HaKnesset, if when the synagogue is being built, he knew Alav Lishtamej Bo, Mutar Lishtamej Bo Bechur Bino, Aval Bishuvo Lo Mahane Tznai. Again, he paskins like Tosfos. If when a synagogue is being built, they stipulate that you be able to use the synagogue, that works when the synagogue is Bechur Bino, when it's in ruin. Aval Bishuvo, but when it's in use, Lo Mahane Tznai, the Tznai doesn't work. Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosfos. But yet, again, even though he's Machmir like Tosfos, he allows for when it's Litzarech Mitzvah. It's going to be important. Okay, because, you know, how do we allow making a kiddush in a shul? So my shul in Harnov, we used to have a little kiddush room, and they gave it to, or they sold it, or they rented it. It's not so clear exactly what happened, but it's used by another shul. Now there's a Beit Knesset in that room that was once a kiddush room. So, you know, okay, we don't have a choice. We make the kiddush when we have a kiddush. Now, you know, with the whole corona thing, we haven't had a kiddush in a very long time. But when we have a kiddush, usually Shabbat Mevarchim, and we have a shir. So we do it inside the sanctuary. Well, how do we do that? Right? So maybe if it's, you know, we say, maybe it's a tzarech mitzvah. We'll come back to that. How does many shuls I've been to, they have a shalashudis in actually the sanctuary. Okay, they put out tablecloths and they eat actually put out tables. The Boston shul here in Harnof is like that. They have the shalashudis mamish in the sanctuary. How do they do that? How do all these chassidish shakloys do that? So we'll see in a moment that maybe that's called a mitzvah. And the Shulchan Aruch ends in Sif Yud Aleph by saying, again, like Tosfot, Bamedvar Mamurim, right? When do we say that this Tanai works for a synagogue that's in ruin? That's Bevate Knesiot Shebechutz Laretz. That's outside the land of Israel. Aval Bevate Knesiot Shebe'eretz Israel Lo Mahane Shum Tanai. This stipulation does not work. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosfot. Okay, so as I mentioned, you know, we are Meikil nowadays. Certainly Meikil for, you know, Yeshiva Bachrim to eat. And we don't have to say that it's, you know, it's only b'shas hadchak, it's only b'dohak, like the Rambam. You know, we say that, you know, like the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah, that, you know, for him to have to leave, okay, that's already a dohak, that's already a need. So we allow him to eat and drink while he's learning. Or we say, like the Ramah, right, quoting the Ran, that no, that the Gemara allows a special dispensation for a Talmud Chacham to eat and drink and take a shluf while he's learning. Why? Because it's called his home. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that is his home. The base medrash is his bayit. It's his home. Okay? So what about Eretz Yisrael? We saw that Tosfot is machmir and says that this tanai, which would allow you to eat and drink in a Beit Knesset, doesn't work in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And the Shulchan Aruch paskins that way in Sif Yud Aleph. So the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah, and we'll see in the Bi'ur Halacha in a moment, they are Meikil even in Eretz Yisrael, and they assume that the Tanai does work even in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it's only Tosfot. Maybe Tosfot's a dat yachid. It's only Tosfot that really raises this issue. Okay, so they assume that maybe the Tanai will work even in Eretz Yisrael, that you can have a Beit Knesset on Tanai, make the stipulation that you can eat and drink in the Beit Knesset. But of course, right, you cannot have kalut rosh. You can't act with levity. They stress. Okay, so maybe this tonight even works. And the Bi'ur Halacha here in source number 15, he says, you know, the Gemara told us that it's dafka the batei knesiot shebavel, the synagogues in Babylonia that were built al tanai, right? So the Bi'ur Halacha says, ein ledaik mizeh el lafuke eretz Yisrael, right? You have to be medayik from that language. You don't have to read that passage, that line in the Gemara so carefully, which would assume that is to exclude the synagogues in Eretz Yisrael. Dibistama enom dim al tanai, where you don't make tanai. Elohim hidnu beferush lama lo yoel. Bi'ur Halacha says that if they would make an explicit stipulation to allow for eating and drinking, even in Eretz Yisrael, why would that not work? Ukamo al kol tashmishe kedusha. Come back to that in a moment. As I mentioned, where we say that by Tashmishe Mitzvah, we allow you to make a Tanai. We allow you to stipulate that you might want to use it for your own purposes. Okay? So what the Bi'ur Halacha is saying is, you know, the Tosfot that we saw, he's reading the Gemara very carefully. The Gemara says that it's the Batei Knesset Shebavavel, the sanctuaries or the synagogues in Bavel, they were built al tanai. So Tosfos reads that very carefully. He's medayik in language of the Gemara. Says, oh, it's dafka only in Bavel that it works. It implies, right, by saying that it's the Batei Knesset in Bavel, that implies that it's to the exclusion, that it excludes the Batei Knesset in Eretz Yisrael, that you can't have the Tanai there. It limits it only to in Chutz La'aretz, only the Batei Knesset Sheba Bavel. The Beir Halacha says, you don't have to read it like that. You could read it like, you know what? They were noheg. They had the minhag to do that in Bavel. Why? As we said already, they did that in Bavel because the synagogues in Bavel were temporary. The hope was that they'd be soon returning back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so the Beir Halacha explains, you don't have to read the Gemara so carefully that when it says that the Batei Knesset in Bavel, the Batei Knesset in Bavel were built out tonight, that it means only Bavel, Ach Verak Bavel, right? Only in the Tutsot, only in the diaspora, only in Chutz La'aretz. No, you know, that's describing what was done. But doesn't imply, says the Beir Halacha, that it doesn't work or it can't work in Eretz Yisrael. And the Beir Halacha sees it as no different than a Cheftza Shel Mitzvah, Tashmish Mitzvah, something that is used in the performance of a mitzvah, where you can, as we've explained, make a tanai for something that's used for the sake of a performance of a mitzvah. You can make a tanai to use it for your own benefit. So it's interesting. It could be that this whole machloket, whether this tanai works in Eretz Yisrael or not, is whether you view this tanai, or whether you view a Beit Knesset like Tashmishei Mitzvah. In other words, is a Beit Knesset just like your sukkah, just like your lulav, that you can make a stipulation, you can make a tanai? According to the Beir Halacha, according to Magen Avraham, according to the Ramban and others, yeah, maybe it's no different than any other object that's used in the performance of a mitzvah. That while it's in the performance of a mitzvah, hands off. But if you make it tonight, so then you can use it for your own personal benefit. The other opinion, maybe Tosfot sees the mitzvah of Kiddushat Beit HaKnesset as an extension of Migdashi Tirao. Because he sees this tonight never works in Eretz Yisrael. And maybe he sees that it's an extension of Kiddushat Eretz Yisrael, of Kiddushat HaMigdash. That this Beit HaKnesset in Eretz Yisrael, it's a Migdash Me'at, but since it's in Eretz Yisrael, it benefits from Kiddushat Eretz Yisrael. It's influenced by Kiddushat Eretz Yisrael and Kiddushat HaMigdash and Migdashi Tiro. So it could be that that's the Nikudat HaMachloket. Whether you see the Beit HaKnesset as an object that's used for the sake of the performance of a mitzvah, like any other object that's used for the sake of the performance of a mitzvah, or whether you view it as actual having inherent kiddushah, like Eretz Yisrael, like the Mikdash. It's a Mikdash Ma'at, Umigdashai Tiro. So that's the, maybe the Nekudat HaMachloket, the Dafka, a Beit Knesset that is in Eretz Yisrael, that is supplanted here, that is permanent here, maybe according to Tosfot, benefits from kiddushat Eretz Yisrael. That's one way, perhaps, of understanding this machloket. Halacha lema'aseh, we are lenient, certainly, you know, for making a kiddush, for having a shalosh shittis, because we say that that's a shtickel mitzvah already. And so we'll end by looking at a few lines from a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein here in number 16, source number 16. This is the tshuva in the first chelik of Orach Chaim that Rav Moshe writes to Rav Pinchas Teitz of Elizabeth, New Jersey, right? Rav Teitz, those of you from the United States, of course, you know, knew of Rav Teitz, maybe some of you knew him. So this is a tshuva that was written to Rav Teitz, actually about whether an individual, a blind person, someone who is visually impaired, whether he can bring his seeing eye dot into a synagogue. Okay, that's the topic of the tshuva. And Derech Agav, Rav Moshe gets into the discussion of eating and drinking in a Beit HaKnesset, which is pertinent to our discussion. There was a famous joke about the individual who brings his dog into shul one morning. Moshe doesn't cite this joke in the tshuva. But an individual brings his dog into shul one morning, and the rabbi says, "What are you doing? You can't bring your dog into shul. This is a makom kadosh. It's a mikdash ma'at." So the man says, "No, you don't understand. This dog knows how to daven." The rabbi says, "This dog can daven?" The man says, "Yeah, watch. Fido, talis, and tefillin. Wow, it's incredible. Dog makes a bracha, wraps himself in a talus, lays tefillin." The rabbi's about to plot. He's flabbergasted. What else can he do? Fido, Birkos HaShachar. The dog starts rattling off the Birkos HaShachar, the blessings in the morning. The rabbi says, "This is incredible." This dog's a phenomenon. You can make $1 million. You can take him on the road. The man says, he just wants to sit and learn. Okay. You're all on mute, so I can't hear the laughter, but I'm hoping I got a few laughs. We'll just end by looking at a few lines here in this tshuva of Rav Moshe, where Rav Moshe writes, here where I've underlined, well, it's sort of mitzvah, tzat. What if it's just, you know, like a kiddush or a shalosh shudas? It's not a mitzvah. It's not like ibur hashana, which is the example that's brought, as we saw, it's in the Yerushalmi and it's in the Rishonim and it's in the Shulchan Aruch. He writes, "Letzorach mitzvah ktsat kigon lechol suda shlishit b'Shabbat." Having the third meal on Shabbos, af she'ain tzorach gadol, even though there's not a great need, can you do that in a Beit HaKnesset? Sharei yachol kol echad beveito. In theory, everyone could go home and have shalosh shudas in their home. No, again, kimat bechol mikomot lahatir. Rav Moshe writes that the minhag is in almost every single place to allow it. Okay, that's the minhag. That's how it's proliferated. Now, again, big shuls have, ulamei smachot. You've got, you've got your ulam, you've got your hall, you've got your auxiliary room, you've got your kiddush room. But many shuls, no. You can have shalosh shudas, writes Rav Moshe, in the Beit HaKnesset. That's the common minhag. The af lasod mishte b'kriyat hachatan o bar mitzvah nogin lakel. But if you make a little, a little kiddush for an ufruf or a bar mitzvah, it's not clear that that's called a mitzvah. To have an obligation for, chatan to get an aliyah, a bar mitzvah maybe, but not to make a kiddush. There's no obligation to have a kiddush. It's not clear that that's called a mitzvah, he writes. V'hachasidim, but the chasidim nogin b'chol batei knesiot shkelehen lahatir af b'davar harishim mamash. K'hadachilu shtia b'yom hayaretzai. He writes that the chassidim have a minhag, they make a l'chaim after davening in the sanctuary, right? They have herring, crackers, some cake, right? Some schnapps. He says, "Im ken b'chorchin lomar shenogim kirashi v'agot ashri b'shem or zarua shemutar atnai afilu b'yishuvan l'achila ushtia v'chia gav na'af below dochak." So he says, you see from this that the minhag is we paskin like the opinions of the mekilim. Das and the Mekilim, like Rashi, like the Ghost Ashri, like the or Zerua, like the Ramban, and quoted by the Ran, that we allow you to make a Tanai, and that even if we're talking about a base medrash, even if it's not Dochak, Mishas Tadchak, right? We allow you to have Shtikl Kiddush inside of the shul, even if it's not a mitzvah, it's not a sudat mitzvah, like, Siyum Masechet or Sudat Shlishit, even if it's a Yeretzai. He says that seems to be the minhag. Rav Moshe, Kidarko Bakodesh, defends the practice as it has become, as it has proliferated. Pukhazi Mai Amadvar. Rav Moshe, this is his style. Kedarko Bakodesh, he defends the way things are practiced. It says, "V'nimtza shenifsak ata ken lalacha." It would appear that nowadays we paskin this way lahalacha, not like the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is machmir, but we paskin like the lenient opinion, right? Af imulai rak bedorot achronim hitchilu linhog ken. Even if this minog to be mekil is only in recent generations, he writes again. Kedarko Bakodesh, he defends the practice. So we saw a lot of different opinions this morning. I'll just end by saying that, Baruch Hashem, we feel comfortable in the Beit HaKnesset, and that's a good thing. We should feel at home in a Beit HaKnesset. But we also have to remember, it's not just our home. It's Hashem's home. It's a Mikdash Ma'at. It's a miniature Mikdash. It's a meeting place. It's a rendezvous point between man and God. And that should really inform our behavior. And now, Baruch Hashem, that we've returned to our beloved Batei Knesset, I think it behooves us to keep this in mind, to bear this in mind. I will unmute all of the participants, okay, and I will take any questions. Here, unmute all. Okay, your microphones should all be unmuted now, okay, except those of you who've elected to mute your own, then you'll have to unmute yourself. You've muted your own microphone. You have to unmute yourselves. Any questions? No questions. Okay, well, I will wish you all a wonderful day. Hope to see you soon in person shortly. Mirtz Hashem. Take care. Have a great day.